confirmed in the purpose of existence. These recollections were written in 1976 by Evelyn Cassilo Saffair as a personal tribute to Swami Adiswarananda, the minister in charge of the Ramakrishna Vivekananda Center in New York City. The glorious first days of being on the path for me were marked with so many incidents, so sacred to the memory one could barely think to describe them. The stories and words of Swami Adiswarananda are engraved in my memory, and the incidents that surround them truly marked the beginning of my life on the path. It was a glorious beginning for one so far from virtue as I. It seemed a true miracle of grace that someone of so little wisdom could have even a little association with one for whom God was as near and dear as father and mother, and whose will was so united to that of God. I thought, if such a one would utter a prayer to God on my behalf, my salvation would be assured. And I believe my initial feeling was right, as association with Mahatmas is considered the greatest boon on the path to self-realization. I was doubly blessed in this respect for 7 months before walking across the threshold of the Ramakrishna Vivekananda Center of East 94th Street. I had met, though not become acquainted with, the director of Arunachala Ashrama, Arunachala Bhakta Bhagavat, who was later to become a dear friend. A friend of mine and fellow aspirant took me to the center for the first time on Ramakrishna's Jayanti Day in 1972, and I still remember vividly the stories of Bhagavan Ramakrishna's life told on that glorious day. Divinely inspired eloquence flowed from Swamiji throughout that first hour I spent in the center, for every word seemed inspired by the direct experience of the truth. The grace of Sri Ramakrishna was being imparted, and the words were almost incidental. It seemed that grace was everywhere, and the chapel itself was surcharged with divine peace. How such a one as I could come away with such an impression can only be explained as a miracle of divine grace. Anyway, I became an awed attender of Swamiji's Friday night classes. During the question and answer periods held after the talk in the library upstairs, which I got to attend on the coattails of my friend, I never had any questions, but I watched carefully, for one could see that Swamiji's answers always exactly suited the questioner and proceeded not, as with most of us, from thought, but from silence itself. If no one asked questions, he withdrew into himself and remained completely still. Though I had no aptitude for intellectual discussion and had no questions anyway, I attended every class possible for me. After the first class in the library, my friend introduced me to Swamiji. This was an unforgettable experience, for Swamiji looked on me with such a look that I almost turned into ashes on the spot. Somehow, I remained standing there and fortunately was able to answer his question whether I had been to any other centers. I had only been to Arunachala Ashrama. Other centers where Hatha Yoga was taught didn't appeal to me. I didn't know what my path was to be or who my teacher was, and my life seemed like an enormous question mark before me. I thought a soul could not have been more lost in the world than I. Like in the hymn of Shankara, I had no wisdom or calling, no servant or master. My only hope was in God, who seemed far away. When I was in this state, one day Swamiji gave a talk on the four paths of Jnana, Bhakti, Yoga and Karma, stressing that a person must take up the practice by the path that suits him. Mustering up all my courage, I asked him my path. If a person is going downtown, he said, and while riding one bus thinks that another may go faster, dismounts and then goes to another, and then another, will he ever get downtown? As I had no practice apart from the chanting done at Arunachala Ashrama, I continued with that practice earnestly, hoping that God Himself would reveal the way meant for me. Early one morning that spring, I had a dream of Swamiji standing before me in brilliant gold and orange robes. He merely looked at me and said, "You can rely on me." Then, in the dream, he said, "Why not come three times?" Meaning, why not attend all three classes at the center rather than just the one which offered the talk after the scripture lesson. The dream was very consoling, and I determined at once not to miss a class. Destiny seemed to have other things in store for me, for three friends requested I take them to Arunachala Ashrama on several occasions, and thus became instrumental in my going there during that May and June, though I was attending all three classes at that time. As it was necessary for me to have a car for my job, I was requested by Barry Zelikowski at the center to offer a ride to Arunachala Bhakta Bhagavat on the last Sunday of the season so Bhagavat could attend the talk. This I considered the greatest honor and jumped at the opportunity. After arriving at the center, Bhagavat went up into the library where several people were gathered around Swamiji, who was sitting in his large chair in the corner. Overwhelmed with emotion, Bhagavat began the chanting as practiced at Arunachala Ashrama, though asked to keep it short due to the failing health of Swami Nikhilananda. The power of death was present, but his songs resounded through the library, and Swamiji's face betrayed his emotion, for one sat before him with genuine love of God. As the singing ended, Bhagavat prostrated before Swamiji, tears running over from his eyes uncontrollably, and Swamiji's face also was filled with tears as he jumped forward to lift him up from the floor. The sight of Swamiji's face, which seldom betrayed any emotion, and the intense and pure love between them changed my life, for I never suspected any such thing could exist on earth. The summer came, more and more the peace of mind felt at Arunachala Ashrama during the evening chanting and recitation drew me there again and again. The personality of Ramana Maharishi drew me, even as Ramakrishna's, and the certainty overcame me that this was the practice for which I was built. As devotees from Arunachala Ashrama had recently departed for the newly purchased Nova Scotia property, ranks dwindled in New York. For warmth and friendship, Bhagavat and I would attend the choir at the Ramakrishna Center, where we enjoyed the association with the noble and aspiring brahmacharis Martin, John, and Barry, and the opportunity on occasion to be with Swamiji in the library. On one occasion, the devotees from Nova Scotia returned to New York for a visit. After the sermon, Swamiji was going upstairs to dinner, and we all met him in the hall. Grabbing Bhagavat's arm, he told us with all love and affection, "Though he appears an ordinary man, everything within him remains hidden. He is Jnana through and through. Cling to him to the end." We resolved to take his advice and stand by our friend unto death. This advice had come from the Lord himself for us. On another occasion, Swamiji said, "Take a long time in deciding who is the teacher and teaching for you. Once the path is found, die in its pursuit. You must stand by your teaching until you die." Such fiery words served as the torch to light and inspire our march to God, and as we remember them now, help us to continue our march within. Once, as the choir was assembling for practice, Swamiji, going toward the stars, unexpectedly said of me, "Though she never says anything, she will conquer the world. Her voice, which was weak now, has become strong from so much taking God's name. I hear it rise during the singing." My breath stopped upon hearing these words. At the same time, I got an unshakable conviction within me that the words which had issued from such a pure soul must come true. Fervently, I prayed that those words might be realized in me. May I remember these words of encouragement even now, is my prayer, and in the darkest hours, may they be my sustenance. I never mentioned these words to anyone. They were a sacred treasure to be kept within. The sermons and stories of Swami Adiswarananda were the wealth of our life during 1972 and 73. Finally, by the Lord's grace, though a mendicant himself, he was instrumental in sending our devotees, four in number, Arunachala Bhakta Bhagavat and his family, seven in all, on a pilgrimage to India during the summer of 1973. Penniless as we were, truly the pilgrimage was in God's hands. The young men with Swamiji at that time were the kind of devotees that aspired to carry out all the wishes of their preceptor even before he himself conceived of them. When Swamiji said, "If I had the money, I would give it to them," the young men, not others than he, without reservation, generously donated funds for the India pilgrimage, and those funds, along with a loan, enabled us to go to India and lay our heads at the Mahasamadhi of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi. We also visited Sri Belur Math and Mission and placed our heads on the feet of revered President Maharaj. We were able to visit Sri Dakshineswar also and offered infinite thanks to God for His abundant kindness showered on us unworthy pilgrims. The kindness the Lord had showered on us surpassed all our expectations, for it was none other than a miracle that 7 penniless devotees were enabled to travel halfway across the earth to visit and gain inspiration at these holy shrines. We received the news of Swami Nikhilananda's Mahasamadhi while we were at Sri Ramanashramam, and upon our return, the entire burden of the fast-growing center had fallen on Swami Adiswarananda. We felt very fortunate still to see him when possible. He told us to have complete and total faith in Bhagavad without reservations. He told us once, "For a woman, the Indian sari is the most dignified and modest dress. We took to sari wearing naturally and varied them only when they became troublesome in the office or wholly from so much use." Swamiji's words were and are our guidelines, and if we acted accordingly, peace of mind was always the result. Finally, I remember a celebration on the eve of Christmas Day in 1973. The talk about Jesus and the meaning of Christianity was over, and before the Christmas tree, as carols were about to begin in the sanctuary, I turned around and saw Swamiji at the back of the hall once again, trying to conceal his emotion, yet his face betrayed the intensity of his desire that we be free from the bondage of Maya, that such love should, in the midst of suffering humanity, take birth in human form, was the very meaning of Jesus' birth for me. And I felt infinitely blessed for our own human birth and the opportunity of salvation. Though life at Arunachala Ashrama drew increasingly upon our time and attention, no one present in the early 70s at the ashrama can forget the important role Swamiji played for us, for His life truly set ours straight on many an occasion, and the Lord alone can repay the enormous debt we owe Him. Note, Swami Adiswarananda was absorbed in the feet of Ramakrishna on 1st of November 2007, and Arunachala Bhakta Bhagavat was absorbed into the feet of Arunachala Ramana on 10th of April 2000.